Good evening. I'm Joyce Susskind. And tonight I have the opportunity to talk to a good friend. In fact, he's a neighbor. And I want to ask him some things I don't get a chance to ask him in the elevator. His name is Truman Capote, raconteur, author, confidant of the criminal world, and the darling of the jet set.
Somerset Maugham has said of Truman Capote that he's the hope of modern literature. Susie Knickerbocker says he's the last of the big-time social butterflies. I'm Barbara Hauer, and welcome to the next 30 minutes of Adult Conversation.
Joyce and Barbara, for adults only. With Joyce Susskind and Barbara Hauer. Tonight's special guest, Truman Capote. Brought to you by Cachet, a new fragrance from Prince Machiavelli.
Barbara, you and Truman have something in common. I think it's in common anyway. You were both brought up in the South. And you, of course, must know a great deal about Southern gentlemen. Does Truman in any way epitomize the Southern gentleman, as I fantasize?
No, I sort of, even for, as a Southerner, fantasize a Southern gentleman exactly as he is, with sort of a large red neck and a white flat straw hat, you know, with a string tie, going around having somebody, you
he's
know,
not
hold
Rhett,
his
he's
whip.
Not, he's not Rhett Butler.
No, well, he's not Rhett Butler. He was the good guy. No, but most prolific writers who have any feel for contemporary times, they leave the South. They really do. Willie Morris, Styron, they go. They don't stay there.
They leave the South, but they seem to continue writing about it.
Well, that's right. They write about what they know best, but they don't stay there. I think they just get a snootful and then they get out and write.
Well, what do they get a snootful of?
Well, they get a snootful of the South. The South is not exactly the most liberal, open, emancipated. There are certain sections that are getting better. But if Truman Capote's anything like I am, I started filling out in the back of movie magazines, draw me and you can get a trip to the place of your choice, anything to get out of the South. And that's how it goes. And I think probably, Truman left at 15. We have to find out how he got out, who he drew to get out.
Yes. I understand he tap danced his way out or something, or wanted to try that.
It beats the way a lot of other people got out, I can tell you that.
Let's find out.
All right.
Right after this.
Every time you buy perfume, your trademark, 1,000 other girls are buying it too. But now there's a new perfume called Cachet. 1,000 girls can wear it, and it won't be exactly the same on any two. Cachet was designed to be something different on every girl. Cachet by Prince Machiavelli. It's as individual as you are.
It takes energy to jump and play.
Truman Capote is more than a Southern, just another Southern gentleman. He's a terribly prolific writer. Other Voices, Other Rooms, In Cold Blood, Breakfast at Tiffany's, A Christmas Memoir, Truman Capote. These are just a few.
Well, a few of his friends, Jacqueline Onassis, Princess Radziwill, Greta Garbo, Gloria Vanderbilt. Those are just a few of his friends. Let's welcome now a good friend to us, Mr. Truman Capote. You're a vision of sartorial splendor. I was trying to think of what you looked like. You know who it is? Reverend Davidson in Rain. And I'll play Sadie, what was her name? Sadie Thompson?
Any day.
Well, actually, the reason today is because your husband came over to pick me up to come to this program, and I had just arrived back from the studio of a painter who's been painting a portrait of me for almost 1 year, and it was just finished today. And he said, "What is that? This coat and this hat and the gloves and whatnot, anything?" I said, "Oh, that's what I was wearing for the portrait, the dark glasses, the whole thing." Like this, the full-length portrait, my size like this, with this hat and the dark glasses and this gloves, it's like this. This is the exact pose, except I have on a pair of evening pumps. Well, it's more chic. And in the background of the whole thing is just this sort of dark figure in this Panama hat with the dark glasses on, and it's all done in a twilight, a strange sort of blue and green twilight. And the portrait was done by James Fosberg, who's one of the two or three really best portrait painters in the world, not just America. But he's worked on it for years, day in and day out. I kept saying, "My God, I wish I could have a psychoanalyst here." Posing, I could be telling him everything, and I could have at least done a year's work of analysis during the thing. But today the portrait was finished. This was the last day I must do the portrait, which is going to be at the Metropolitan in the show of contemporary.
Did he? Do you want to take this off? It's very warm here.
I don't keep it.
But take it off.
I'll take it off bit by bit. I'll take it all.
Closer. Did he describe to you, Truman, why he saw you in this particular way?
He didn't. I wear this all the time.
I know you do, but today.
Variations. I mean, I have this particular coat on all kinds of, you know, dark materials or whatnot. And I always wear in the winter straw hats, different kinds of straw hats. I mean, because you know why? Everybody said it was terribly strange and eccentric. And I said, but it's not, because you see, if you're in a cold climate, it's warm. It really is.
What, a straw hat?
Yeah, they're very warm. And if it's raining, all the rain just goes off like snow falls on it, and the snow just falls all off.
What's the
it
matter
doesn't
with
absorb
felt?
Anything, but it's warm.
I if still think it's
if
eccentric.
If you're in a warm climate, then it's cool. It works, baby.
As long as it works.
It works, and I think it's got a certain kind of panache.
I knew you were one of the best contemporary writers, but a stand-up comedian I didn't know. I didn't know you were. Sit down and talk to us and tell us what you'd have said to the psychiatrist if he'd been there while the portrait was being painted.
Well, what I would have said to a psychoanalyst, Lord, I've never been a psychoanalyst, and I don't intend to be, so.
Well, why not?
Well, it was a passing thought. It was a passing time.
You must feel like it.
It was merely a passing thought, I mean. Why just stand up perfectly silent and pose for a portrait for hours on hours for a year?
You have a lot of the psychoanalyst in you, though. Because I know that Truman can get me to tell my life story, and he really is the confidant of some of the world's most beautiful, glamorous women. Now, how did you get me, and how did you get all those other women to tell you all their secrets?
And why haven't you tried me?
Wait,
he's just met you. I haven't met you before. Tonight, I mean. I don't get people to tell me their secrets. It's just a quality of friendship, really. I mean, if I like somebody and they sort of become a friend of mine, I mean, I think real friendship is the most difficult and rare thing in the world. And I just sort of believe in it.
How do you know when you have a real friend?
Oh, I just take a chance.
Truman, you do have a reputation, though, for being the confidant of many people in all walks of life. And you've got that way. I mean, just talking to you backstage, I just wished I had a deep secret I could unload on you because I felt the need to. And you also have a reputation for being very, very sharp and very quick and a little bit sharp in the tongue. Now, how do you keep those things separate? I mean, do you ever want to just let somebody have something right back in their face after they've confided something to you?
No. I mean, you know, my thing is, I always say to people, don't tell me anything that you really, really, truly don't want me to either repeat or be. I mean, you have to really tell me. If you do, then I won't. But you don't know, it was very amusing the other day. Someone called me up in a great state of alarm because they said that I had said that...
they had said that you had said.
They were going to break up. I said, well, you know, I mean, 80% of the time when people accuse me of things, I'm absolutely guilty. You know, I really did say it. But this time I'm innocent. I don't really mind taking the blame when I'm guilty, but I don't. I sort of object to if I'm innocent.
You know, I'm curious to see you without your glasses. Can you take them off and let me see the eyes that have looked in the eyes of half the world's important people? Oh, I'm in love. Truman, I was just teasing you about perhaps the only thing that I've ever heard that you and President Nixon have in common is that you both think that Charles Manson is guilty. What do you think this crime and this trial will do to the jurisprudence of the country? Where do you see? Do you see any changes coming from it?
Well, I think that in this particular trial, that when it gets into the federal courts, it's going to be reversed, and then these people are going to go back on trial sort of in an endless way. And I think maybe it might have an effect because just as an example of what's entirely wrong with the American juridical process, that by the sheer din of the publicity and the outrageousness of the whole process, that it might, but I don't think so, because the various rulings of the Supreme Court in the last 6 years have been so definite and irreversible, and I'm not against them on the whole, but it's just when something becomes so dramatically obvious as this trial makes it do, but it happens every day in every little tiny county court in this country. I followed certain trials, certain things for period of years. I mean, and people who are absolutely, completely guilty go on being tried again and again, and then they go out on this or that or the other. I personally believe that everyone connected with this particular trial will all be free within the next 3 years.
Oh, well, you just set my feelings for jurisprudence back.
How could they possibly go free? They will, though, on one legal technicality or another. They're definitely going to get another trial, despite the 7-month trial, and despite whatever the penalty verdict, which is a joke anyway. I mean, when people say, you see, no one understands about what these penalty things are. They say so-and-so is going to receive a life sentence. There's no such thing as a life sentence.
I mean,
it's 7 years. And usually they take off all of the time that the person served in jail. Now, for instance, let's say that the particular people in this case get a life sentence and that they're smart enough not to appeal, you know? They'll all be out in 4 years.
But Truman, I don't mean to come off like an arch conservative, but when you think about it, the only people who've gotten a life sentence are Sharon Tate and her friends. I mean,
what's
the matter when these people are set free?
Well, I mean, that's something you should sit back and ask yourself.
Well, I'm asking you. I don't know. You tell me. You're the expert.
No, I'm not. I agree with you.
And they'll all go out, Barbara, and they'll all get very rich.
And they'll all be on the cover of Time, Life, Look, and Newsweek, and we'll book them on this show. Never, never.
We won't book them on this show.
You know, Truman, this whole thing of permissiveness, and you were talking a few minutes ago about how much better the court systems are in England. Mm-hmm. Seems that lots of things are better in England. There's this whole age of candor, where we have now politicians like Harold Hughes admitting that he has an alcoholic problem in the past. Now he's a presidential timber. Kate Millett admitting to lesbian relationships. She's the head of the Women's
Meryl
Liberation.
Miller.
Meryl Miller talking about homosexuality. What's brought about this candor, and will it change anything? All these people speaking out, will it break down the mores and the ridiculous structures?
I'm all for that.
Well, will it?
No.
Why is it happening now? What is the significance of it?
Well, with the particular things you're talking about, I happen to find extremely intelligent.
That's right, but
I believe in people being in what they are and talking about anything they want to. I mean, what's wrong is for anybody to be afraid.
Why have we always
been afraid? Well, I think fear is the worst thing in the world, and I've seen more people destroyed by it than any other thing.
You mean people are afraid of people who are not exactly like them?
No. What I think is the worst thing in the world is people who are afraid of themselves. You know, there's only one real trouble in life, and that is to be in trouble with yourself. That's the only real trouble. Being in trouble with somebody else or your environment, you can lick that, you know? It's that when you're in trouble with yourself that you're really in trouble. And most people that are in trouble with themselves are because of some fear. The more that a person feels personally liberated in any direction at all, that's a healthy thing.
Truman?
Permissiveness. I don't even know what the word permissiveness means. It's ridiculous.
What frightens you?
Me, myself?
Yes.
It's when I feel that things in my life are becoming unstabilized in a way, in relationship mainly to myself and my work. As long as I feel a direct connection between myself and my work that's good, then everything in my life is stabilized because I can handle
your
most
work. Is that
else.
Important to you? Is it more important than, say, friendship?
No. Well, what do you mean by friendship? I mean, it's more important to me than it's more important to me than. I mean, I would sacrifice a friend for my work. Yes. It's the only thing that I would sacrifice a friend for. I mean, if I felt that somebody was really being destructive to me.
I may have to sacrifice your friendship for my work. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back in just a minute.
There's more to drinking Schlitz malt liquor than just raising a glass. Chances are, it'll surprise you a little at first. That's why we put the picture of the bull on every label. The bull on the label says it all. This is the bold one, brash and brawny, so you know just exactly what you're getting into. Boldness that never came from a premium malt liquor before. Schlitz malt liquor. If you treat it like a sport, be sure you make your own rules and be ready to handle some excitement. We put more into Schlitz malt liquor so you get more out of it. Nobody makes malt liquor like Schlitz. Nobody.
During our Buck a Box sale, you can buy our regular $1.29 dinner box of Kentucky Fried Chicken with all the trimmings for only a buck. Now that deal makes sense. 29 cents to be exact.
Buck a Box sale's on right now.
Ever get a case of the sorries? Sorry you picked that wallpaper. Sorry you bought that car. Hey, I don't care if you're looking at a Ford, Chevy, or Plymouth. Don't jump at the first deal you get. Get a better deal on a better car. Go to your Pontiac dealer before you buy. Take a look at Pontiac's new small car, the Ventura 2. It can save you more than money.
Truman, from the age of candor to the age of sentimentality, and we seem to be living in the same two ages at this time. And I know you read everything, so I want to get to the love story. Mm-hmm. In this wild and woolly time we're living in, why did people react so to that sentimental, sweet little novel?
I didn't think it was a sentimental, sweet little novel. I thought it was a sort of a kind of highly manipulated sob story. You know,
I knew you'd have candor.
Well, no, it's like, do you remember an old movie, Betty Davis movie called Dark Victory?
Very well.
Yes. It's exactly like Dark Victory. You know, it's manipulating everything from if you know that the heroine's going to die. Mm-hmm. You know, like in Dark Victory,
but
Betty Davis from the very moment. No, it's a thing. I mean, I defy
the world
you not
to
go.
To it.
No. It's the thing where the heroine is going to die. It's like Wuthering Heights. There are all of these sob stories. I don't care whether they're on a cheap level or a high level. Wuthering Heights is on a very high level. Wuthering Heights is a sob story. You know, I mean, when it was made into a film with Meryl Oberon and Laurence Olivier, I mean, everybody was sitting there just sobbing all the way through it, you know?
Did you sob your love story?
I thought it was really as disgusting as a Doris Day movie.
But Truman.
No, I was throwing up. But sobbing, no.
If love story is that banal and it's making that much money and thousands of Americans
They're
are wrong. Now, wait.
To it.
Alan Shepard walks on the moon, the first millionaire to walk on the moon, he takes a few golf swings. What kind of a banal country are we? I mean, I see almost.
No, my dear, listen, you can take the most sophisticated person, more or less, to a thing like Love Story, and they will come out of it, you know, three sheets or three handkerchiefs to the wind, because the film's programmed that way.
You mean it's an emotional laughter?
Well, I always go to practically everything and look at it from a technical point of view, so there's no point even paying attention to my opinion about things like that. I thought it was just, you know, for the vomitorium.
What about, what are the other great bestsellers in this
banal?
How
about The Sensuous Woman and everything you want to know about sex and we're afraid somebody to ask you?
Oh, well, that's one of the most dangerous books that's ever been published. Everything you want to know about sex? I mean, the author of that book sent it to me about several months before it was published. I mean, I get, you know, masses of books from all these, and I picked that up, and I looked through it, and I sort of thumbed through here, and I read a couple of sections. I thought, well, gosh, this is really a dangerous book. This man's supposed
to.
Oh, because, my God, it's a joke.
So it's
ludicrous. It's absolutely absurd. I mean, the man doesn't know what he's talking about at all.
He knows more than I do.
What?
Yes.
Well, I don't. I mean, there are sections in that book that, if people really believe them, are really very. He's a very ignorant man.
Well, there's a
new section about homosexuality in that book. It says really he ought to be put in San Quentin.
I didn't read that section. What did he say?
Oh, well, read it. We'll discuss it.
Oh, okay. There's another book that's out. I think it's called The Psychology of Self-Esteem, and it's predicted to rise to the bestseller list. And it's written by a man who says that if you have too strong a belief in God, then you don't have any self-reliance, any sense of I can do it myself. Therefore, the analogy being that if you believe in God, you really are just a bag of bones. You can't do anything. Have you read that? Comment on that at all?
No, I haven't, but it's the one thing that I really don't agree with. Because I think that that people who believe in God, that it really, if they really do, it's something that's extraordinarily therapeutic for them. I think that's, to me, that's the whole point of religion. If you really do, then it has a terrific therapeutic value, and that is its only value.
On that note, we have to move on again.
The preceding program was pre-recorded.
Joyce and Barbara has been brought to you by Vaseline Intensive Care Lotion, new intensive care treatment for dry, chapped hands.